What was the moment that you realized, all right, I think I might have to self-deport to Cameroon?
My first moment of realization was l literally when Trump won the election. I was like, oh, it's over with.
I'm Maya Lau, and this is Other People's Pockets, the show where I ask people how much money they make and how their finances work so that the questions we all have about money can be a little bit less of a mystery. Please support the show by giving it a rating and review wherever you're listening or watching. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok at It's Maya Money, and email me with guest ideas or anything else at otherpeoplespockets@gmail.com. My guest today is Amélie Tchungi. She's a Cameroonian immigrant who moved to the U.S. at age 6. After 2 decades growing up in Chicago and spending part of her 20s in L.A., she decided to self-deport to Cameroon after the Trump administration said it would revoke temporary protected status, or TPS, for Cameroonian nationals. The cancellation of TPS meant she would no longer be able to live in the U.S. legally. This experience of moving back to West Africa, a home she only knew as a child, sparked her passion for digital storytelling, leading to multiple viral TikTok videos on her channel, AmsTheBomb237, where you can watch almost in real time what it's like to transition to life in Yaoundé, the capital of Cameroon. Her work explores the tension between lived reality and disillusionment through themes of immigration, assimilation, spirituality, feminine rage, and karmic lineage, drawing from her BFA in film and television from DePaul University. Amélie, welcome to Other People's Pockets.
Thank you so much for having me, Maya. Super excited to be here.
You are going through quite the Saturn return this year.
Yeah, it's really shook me to my core.
Well, for people who don't know, Saturn return is an astrological phenomenon that you could probably explain better than I. But basically, when you're 27, your whole life gets turned upside down.
Yes. So funny enough, I had to self-deport when my Saturn moved into Aries. And everyone's Saturn is different. I think it's by the year you're born. So I was born in 98. My Saturn in Aries is in my 9th house, which deals with immigration, higher philosophy,
really?
Spirituality. Yeah. So I was actually very, very, I almost went into psychosis searching all of this information. But when I found out that, the 9th house actually dealt with immigration and visas, I was so shocked and it kind of clicked for me.
Wow. Okay, so walk us through a little bit of your story. You're from Cameroon originally, a country in West Africa, but you moved to the U.S. and really spent most of your time growing up in Chicago. So tell us a bit about your story.
So I was born in Yaoundé and then moved out to the States, specifically Chicago, in 2003 for education. So from first grade through college, I was going through school in Chicago. I have 6 other siblings, so we all kind of went through that. My younger siblings were born in the States, but 4 of us were born in Cameroon. I went to a private Catholic high school, and then I went to a private Catholic college as well. So DePaul University. I got my BFA in film and television. DePaul definitely changed my outlook on life and also just art itself. So growing up in Chicago was so great. It really taught me a lot about my values and what I appreciate in life. And when I graduated in 2021, I moved to Los Angeles and I worked in the film industry for about 4.5 years. I had multiple roles while I was out there. Program assistant at a nonprofit, another program coordinator role at another nonprofit. And then I also worked as a talent assistant. And the two nonprofits that I worked at, just want to give them a shout out, Women in Film, WIF, and also the Creative Coalition. So those two roles really, really changed me to be the person that I am today.
And when you were growing up in Chicago, you were with your parents?
Yeah. So for the most part, my dad worked for the UN, so he was constantly traveling and my mom stayed with us. And then my mom actually got deported because she overstayed twice. She was kicked out of the US for like 8 years. So during that time, we stayed with immediate family, but also we were being taken care of by like aunts and uncles, and we were really just raising ourselves.
How old were you at that point?
I want to say it was 13 all the way throughout college.
So growing up, you had temporary protected status the whole time. Was that the case? Was that your immigration status?
No. So actually, growing up, I was on an F1 visa, which is a student visa. So basically, because I was in school all throughout like my stay in the United States, I was able to just be on an F1 visa. And in 2022, that is when I switched over to TPS. That was when Cameroon was granted TPS through the Biden administration. And it went on for 3.5 years. So when you do an F1 visa, at the end of your F1 visa, which is usually college or undergraduate degree or a master's degree, you are allowed to have 1 year working in the field of the degree that you got. So I worked 1 year on my F1 visa in the film industry. It was OPT. For those of you who don't know, it's literally just, it's kind of like a tester into the field that you got your degree in.
Mm-hmm. And then was your sense that eventually this could translate into lawful permanent residency or citizenship?
I believed that it could, especially with all the school that I did there. But I always had a feeling in the back of my mind like, oh, this is going to catch up to me. So I need to be as prepared as I can be. With everything going on, I think a lot of people don't know there's not a lot of viable ways to get a green card. It's very, very hard. I don't want to say easiest, but it kind of is like one of the easiest ways to get a green card is through marriage. And that's just something that at the end of everything that happened, I was not willing to do. So I really, truly believe that I was going to be able to get sponsored by a company, actually. But working in entertainment, unless you're in a higher level position, that is just very hard. Because companies do have to pay for your application and it is a lottery process. So it's not even guaranteed.
Right. And I love in some of your videos you've talked about, like, I wouldn't even think of getting married for immigration status. Like, please, everyone, stop talking to me about that.
Yeah, I think it was funny enough. I had some push from my family to try to explore that option with my ex, and I decided not to go through with it because it just the compatibility was not great. But I also think it puts women and, well, honestly, whoever decides to go through that path in a very vulnerable position because your life could be like the rug could be pulled from under your feet in any second. So I just didn't want to be controlled in that sense. And I don't know if you could tell, I have a very fiery personality. I like having my own ways in life. So I definitely didn't want to just fall into a path where I was kind of being controlled. So that's why I chose not to do it, besides the fact that it's completely illegal.
What was the moment that you realized, all right, I think I might have to self-deport to Cameroon?
My first moment of realization was literally when Trump won the election. I was like, oh, it's over with. The wording this time around with his second campaign really, really focused on immigration. And I felt that this was the year that they were going to push a lot of people out and force a lot of people out. And I would rather be the person that's like, hey, I'm just going to have to do this without putting myself in a position where now I'm in a country that I've legally been in for years, illegally, that would look bad if I would ever want to try and come back. So I was just like, oh my gosh, yeah, it's definitely time to start at least thinking about it. And then in March, really January, February, him and his team, Immigration Services, started canceling TPSs for these countries that have had TPS for a long time. So even countries that had TPS for over 20 years, he canceled. That's how I knew, oh, my turn is coming. But I still don't think I was sitting in the fact that it was actually coming compared to when it actually happened. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is happening.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of the most common things I've ever talked about in therapy is my relationships with various people in my life. My partner, my daughter, my parents, and even people I work with. Part of why I'm interested in personal finance is that money is something we do with other people, whether it's a roommate or family or with business partners. Even when relationships are good, there's still so much to negotiate and reflect on, and no one has it all figured out. If you have a relationship that you find challenging, therapy can be a great way to sort through those feelings. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, with more than 12 years of experience matching millions of people with licensed therapists. You can specify your needs and preferences for what kind of therapist you want, who has experience in whatever you're struggling with, and BetterHelp will pair you with the right person. If you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. What was it like to realize I'm going to have to say goodbye to friends, to a career that I've been trying to build up? I'm not sure when or if I can ever come back. I mean, that's a lot to carry.
Yeah, I feel like for the career, it was just more of a money yeah. thing. Like, oh my gosh, how am I going to make money now? I went from making $4,000 a month to like no income at all. So my mind just kept on being like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to make money? Like, I did find myself getting a bit frustrated with the way things were running. So I was just like, kind of over it, in a sense that I had also just come off of like 3 months of straight traveling. So I was just very, very exhausted. And the fact that I had come back from traveling and now I had to deal with, oh, I'm going to have to go home. I was a bit scrambled. And then saying goodbye to like my friends, it was really, really hard. But a lot of my friends were in my corner and really just reminding me of who I am and where I came from and that, you know, I'm such a resilient person, so I will get through this, and that it might suck in the moment, but it's for, you know, a bigger, better picture. So they really tried to help me. I did fall into like a deep depression from like May until like early October. I'm finally out of it, thankfully. But yeah, it was a bit hard.
And what are the costs involved in self-deporting? Like, how much did it cost you to kind of do the move? And did you get any help with that?
I want to say it cost me over $2,000, $2,000 to $3,000. The flight ticket alone was like $1,100. Then I had to pack up my apartment and ship like three boxes from LA to Chicago. And that was around $700. Then I had to pay for like all the luggages. I want to say it costs around like $600 because I also covered for like my dad as well. And then I had to book a flight back from LA to Chicago. That was around like $300, $400.
Because you were dropping stuff off in Chicago first before coming back to Cameroon.
Yes. So I decided that if I wanted to end anywhere, like my stay in the United States, it would be in Chicago. That's where I grew up. That's where all my best friends are. So funny enough, they announced that they canceled TPS. June 7th was the cutoff date. So I went back to Chicago mid-May, and then June 7th came and they were like, actually, we're going to give you guys 2 more months so you guys can get out of here. And I was like, I mean, okay, kind of saw that coming too, because the way that they canceled TPS, they were supposed to tell us at least 2 months before they were going to cancel it, but they didn't do that. I think it was like a month and a half before they were supposed to cancel it. So they kind of broke their own rules and then gave us an extension. It was a lot of money that I dispensed. On top of that, I got like filming equipment because I was like, I'm going to film all of this. And I got a new phone. I got a laptop because my like previous laptop was broken. So that was another $1,500.
Mm-hmm. Did you get any money from the government for choosing to self-deport?
Yeah, so I actually, they started a program called Project Homecoming, where they said they would cover your flight and then give you an $1,000 stipend if you self-deported. Unfortunately, because I was so quick to get out of there, they ended up not covering my flight, even though I literally told them in the email, hey, I already traveled, but if you can reimburse me this flight because it literally emptied my bank account, that would be great. They didn't care. They just sent me the $1,000 stipend. Not surprised.
How much money are you making now, if any?
I am not making any money. I don't have an income. I have received like waves of money, like from the U.S. government because I self-deported. That held me down for a while. And then I've received money from like family members and whatnot, and also like refunds from things that I like got in the U.S. So like I had a Dua Lipa concert ticket that was like $200 and something that was refunded back to me, which was my own birthday gift to myself.
When was that
going to
be?
October 5th. So I was very, very sad. If anything, I was just like, oh my gosh, now I'm missing all these concerts that I had planned to go to. So this sucks. But at least I got that money back. And yeah, it's just been like small amounts of money. There was like a Facebook settlement that was going around a couple weeks ago. So I got money from that. It was like around like $40, $50. And the cost of living here is so low compared to the West that $200 can take me such a long way. So I've been very grateful for that.
And are you living with family now? Do you have to pay?
Yeah, I'm living with family. I don't have to pay. My dad built a house here, so it's like no rent, no job, but I'm able to sustain myself. And then I had a pretty good amount saved. I want to say I saved like $2,000 for me to like sit on while I first came back and got like readjusted and everything. Mm-hmm. So
do you have any debt?
I have credit card debt, unfortunately. I was pretty good my first couple of years in LA about like really not putting a lot of money on my credit card. And then it started with a Beyonce concert ticket and it like just spiraled
from
into
there.
Literally, yeah.
How much was the Beyonce concert ticket?
It was really only, it was $1,400, but I bought a ticket for my friend, so she paid me back half of that.
Okay, so $700.
Yeah. It was just,
was,
I was
it worth
just
it?
Like, oh my gosh. Yes, it was worth it because I was front row. So that was amazing. And that was my first time ever seeing Beyonce. So I was just like, oh, like I'm so blessed. I don't regret it. I would do it again. Honestly, I think I'd just be more cautious about the other things that I spent my credit money on. But I have around $14,000 in credit card debt. And a lot of that was amassed because I was moving around a lot in LA. Like each year I moved in LA, and the one apartment that I had before I moved into the apartment that I was just in, it was just so expensive to furnish and expensive as well. And I was really like fighting for scraps. All of my money went to rent. I was living above my means. That's what it came down to.
Do you make any money from your TikTok channel?
I can't because Cameroon is not a part of the creator fund. So in that aspect,
I didn't even know that was a thing that you had to be from a certain country to to make money as an influencer on TikTok.
So the creator fund is one way to make money from TikTok. That's like the most, I would say, prominent way to make money. But they said that I can make money from going like live and like having subscriptions. Unfortunately, I'm not the person that likes to just go live, and I haven't tried it, so maybe I'll try it one day. I just think TikTok, they used to pay a lot, but now from what I've seen online, people don't get paid a lot anymore from TikTok, and they generate, you have to generate like a lot of views to get a lot of money. So I feel like even if I was making money off of that monetization through my page, I would probably only getting like $50-$60, which is crazy because I've amassed a lot of views in a short amount of time.
So how much would you say, living in Yaoundé, Cameroon, you have to pay, say, every month? You're living in your dad's house, so you don't have to pay rent, but I imagine you have to pay for some food and transport, and if you want to do something for yourself. What does that look like per month?
When I got here, I was footing a lot of the bills for the house, and then I had to literally put my foot down and be like, hey, yeah, I save money for myself, not for y'all. So like, we're gonna have to figure a way around this, because I was going to a lot of markets and buying a lot of food. That's mostly what it's been. It's just been like hair, nails, transportation sometimes, and then food and groceries for the house. So I want to say the groceries range from like anywhere from like $100 to $200.
And how many people are you feeding with that?
Three. Me, my brother, and my dad. So it's not, I don't know if you live with men, but they eat a lot. And it's like kind of crazy. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you guys are like inhaling this food. And like my money's burning while you guys inhale this food.
And your dad did, why do you think he expected you to pay for stuff, because you were coming from the U.S. like, did he also say I can, or was it because you're living in my house so you pay for the groceries? Yeah. Or,
well, he's retired now. As the only woman in the house, it falls on me to make sure that they're fed and whatnot, which I've honestly had a lot of clarity about the past couple of months. I think it's very interesting how weaponized incompetence literally starts in your household. And it's very annoying because I feel like you see a woman and you just expect her to do everything, which that shouldn't be the case. And I'm not saying that they don't do anything. I just feel like a lot of pressure fell on me financially when I first got here. And that's how a lot of my money disappeared. But I think my relationship to money changed as well. So I want to say it was just like, oh, like, you're a woman, so now you're gonna cook. I like naturally fell into that role. I think it's just like a very patriarchal view on things. And then also just like African immigrant families, like a lot of the domestic work falls on women.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a video of yours where you're talking about living with your dad, and you're just like, I just have this fantasy of living alone. I just want to be alone and not have anybody bother me. And that, it, to me, that is also a money conversation, because the reason why we live with other people often is due to money. It's not just because, right, you know, you love your family so much. It's because it's what makes sense financially. And so yeah. I'm curious how you think about that, and if it makes you want to make a lot of money in part just so that one day you can live alone.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just a moment of realization that I had taken on so much of the domestic work in the house, and I'm like, why am I doing this for men specifically when I can literally just be doing this for myself? But like you said, it's been a conversation of like, I literally have nowhere else to go. Like, this, the fact that I'm here and that I am able to be in a house safely that my dad built, like, that has subsided a lot of my fears when it came to me coming back and having a place where I can be more stable. But I think also, like, I have always, because my dad worked for the UN, he traveled a lot when we were younger. So a lot of money was coming in. So I've always been like, oh my gosh, I want to have a lot of money so I can travel and like buy all the things that I want and then also have my own home. But I think in the past couple of weeks, especially I want to say 2 months ago, I had the realization that I am so stuck on ruminating in what I could have in the future instead of learning to live with what I've got, which that also happened in LA. So I was repeating a lot of patterns of me chasing trends or just like living above my means and not learning to stick with what I've got and being very intentional with where my money went.
How much money were you making in LA?
I was making $60,000 a year. That's the most that I had made when I was living out in LA, which is nothing, by the way.
Which like, is nothing in LA, yeah.
Which is nothing in LA. Compared to, I mean, granted, I was in like an assistant position. So I guess you can say for an assistant, that is a pretty good salary. Before that, I was also hourly. I was on hourly payroll. So I was making like $23 an hour, which again, that's even less than nothing. So 60K, having a 60K annual salary really changed my outlook. It was my first salary job. So I was just like, oh my gosh, like this is so exciting. This is a step in the right direction.
What's your plan for how to make money going forward? Like at some point, you might need to make more money. You might want to find your own place in Yaoundé or whatever. Mm-hmm. What are you looking at?
I really want to get a job. I need to get a job. But I just realized that 9 to 5s, unless it's something that I'm extremely passionate about, I won't ever throw myself back into that world again, just because I feel that it stifled my creativity a lot. I was so burnt out from giving so much energy to environment and spaces that didn't really give me that same energy back. So now I'm more of like, I want to make money with my creativity. I never want to be an assistant again. Like, it's just, it's too much. I barely want to be a coordinator role would be like the starting position. And I would want to work in a creative field, but I really just want to take a bet on myself and work on my writing because I feel that I'm really good at it and I just have to continue honing that that skill.
Writing for film and television or writing other things?
Writing for film and television, writing articles. I have a Substack. So after the whole self-deportation thing happened, I kind of was like, okay, wait, let me start writing and let me create a Substack and let me post. And it's actually been very healing to do that. There's all like different mediums of writing. Whatever it is, I love doing it all. But for right now, I'm like, okay, film and television, let's pray. Let's mm-hmm. fingers crossed that I can, you know, have my big break.
Well, speaking of writing and language, which languages do you speak in your daily life now? And which ones do you feel are the most comfortable for you to write like a piece of creative writing in?
I speak French and English. It's a French speaking, it's a French and English speaking country, but I live in the French part of the country. So anytime I go out, I have to speak French, but I'm very, very comfortable writing in English. I would say I'm more comfortable speaking in English, but the thing is that, it happens for every other language too. There are some words in English that are not words in French. And I just think the English language is so complicated for no reason compared to other languages. But I'm trying to tap more into my French because I feel like that's a part of myself that I lost while I was growing up in the U.S. But my parents speak fluent French. They also speak Iwondo, which is the language from our village.
Do you speak it?
I can speak certain words. I can understand some of it, but I'm currently also in the process of like learning more of it because my mom's like, you need to speak your native language. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right.
Do you think that the U.S. or Cameroon is more consumerist?
The U.S. for sure. The U.S. for sure. I just feel like a lot is pushed out and a lot of people, not to be like crass, I just feel like a lot of people don't have a sense of their own. Like, I don't think I had my own sense of identity while I was out there. I was just listening and following to what I was consuming. Over here, people are hard workers. It's a lot tougher for the youth specifically to get jobs out here. So that turns into hustle culture. I mean, you have kids at markets, even a lot of people with degrees at supermarkets selling things, whether it's spices or meat or clothes and whatnot. Like, you really have to work hard out here. And I feel like a lot of people are fighting to live over here and they're having to hustle and go out of their way. It's a lot of like, there's an entrepreneurial spirit out here.
Well, yeah, I was kind of thinking when you were talking about how hard this year has been. It has been so much transition. You probably have, you know, you've said goodbye to friends. You've had to put your career into a different mode. But like, you're young and you're putting yourself in a situation where you're seeing the people around you hustle and you're seeing a huge sense of entrepreneurship and kind of like rebooting your life with that in mind, which I think will be really useful for you.
Yeah, I definitely agree. When I moved to LA, I started all over again compared to when I was living in Chicago. Like, I had to build myself up from the ground. So this, me moving back to Cameroon is like literally the same thing. It's a reboot. I'm starting over again, but this time I get to make the choices that I want to make and not be influenced by outside voices or like external validation. I've come to the realization that a lot of my behavior was based on external validation. So now it's time to like sit down and really be like, okay, so what do you want? But I think it's also just about me believing in myself for the first time in a long time and being like, yeah, you went through all of this like trauma, but if you've built once, you can build again and you will come back stronger than last time. So I did a mindset switch after a lot of mental breakdowns.
Well, also now, it's not to say that you didn't have this before, but you have a perspective now living in Cameroon that is unique and that you're sharing and you have a story to tell and you're on this journey and you're really having an experience that's giving you a lot of grist for the mill. It's giving you this story to put on TikTok. Like, you know, there's so many people out there just posting about shit that doesn't matter. And your story is really interesting to watch because it's like you clearly have this American perspective and accent and all that. And then you're like, but I'm here in Cameroon and look at what life is like and it's so different. And so I think that that's a real gift to have a story to tell that's not just like, you know, another day in the life of an influencer.
Yeah, I feel like that's one thing that I've been like, oh my gosh, like so many ideas have popped up in my mind creatively because of everything that's happened. And I feel like it also pushed me to dig even deeper. Because I moved to LA, I felt that I had to write certain things so that I would be able to sell. So again, it's this obsession with money and making my voice be heard and having that external validation that really, really clouded my creativity. I feel like I was blocked for a long time. And then coming back, I literally did The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which such a good book. I recommend it to everyone. It literally helped me unblock myself. She talks about like your environment and how that shapes what you do creatively. And then she had like little prompts that she had us work with. It's a 12-week experience. It was a lot of shadow work, which if you're not familiar with shadow work, is just basically digging into the psyche and the dark part of yourself that you push away, or the trauma that you push away, and really focusing on how that shaped you as a person and why you do the things that you do. For example, in one section, it's like, what did you like to do that you, when you were younger, that you no longer do now? So prompts like that, and it makes you really dig deep. I feel like it cleared space for me in the day to think about other things. And I just feel like writing is really healing. So it just kind of brings you back to your inner child, your inner artist, and how to nurture that inner child and inner artist. Because I feel like a lot of our traumas stem from what happened to us while we were younger. So it's better to just tackle those things, and it's guided me in my writing.
I love that. It's making me think of this quote that I heard that's from Gabriela Garcia Marquez, which is, everyone has a public life, a private life, and a secret life. And the secret life is kind of what you're saying about your trauma, or something that's so deep that even you don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. And getting to, and your secret life ends up being kind of actually what you're wrestling with your whole life.
I definitely agree on that, because I just feel like there's just so much that shaped me into the person that I am today, and it would be a disservice for me. I'm a Scorpio, so I really love digging into things and like investigating reasons that people do what they do. And it starts with yourself. So I feel like it would be a disservice to me if I didn't sit down and really think about why I've made the choices that I've made. I don't think that I would have posted the TikTok that I did, my self-deportation TikTok, if I didn't have like that breakthrough of like, no, like you should put it out there. You never know who has been through this.
Yeah, that's so interesting to hear, because if you look at your TikTok, you seem like, oh, I'm such an open book and I share everything about my life.
No, that is not the case at all. Unless you're like my close friends, you're not going to know anything about me. I don't really like sharing much, especially on social media, because it's like very messy. I used to get so angry and upset about the things I saw on social media. Then I realized some of this content is just generated to make you uncomfortable and to
keep
make money.
You scrolling.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a journey.
What do you indulge in financially?
My gosh. Okay. So a year ago, it was like gym clothes, like obsessively gym clothes, because I was in the gym constantly, and then getting my hair done. So like maintenance things. So the way I use my money is I would hold on very tightly to my money, and then I'll have spurts of energy to spend, and then would spend a bulk of it on clothes. Literally, it's so bad, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm making this money, but I'm not allowing myself to enjoy it. And my sister was really great about being like, money is like made to be spent. You can't just sit on your money. Eventually, it's going to be spent. So I have tried. I feel like I've adopted that now. So that was like my previous life. Now I would say that I'm spending a lot of my money on like food and snacks. But that's just because I need those to live. And then like anything that has to do with maintenance, like my nails or my hair. But even that I've slowed down on. My nails are not currently done. They were done every single week the past 3 months, but I kind of had to slow down because I was like, wait, I really am taking an audit of my finances, and I need to make sure that I'm not overspending. I've actually stopped spending a lot, because I'm like, I'm applying to grad school. So I'm like, okay, like if you apply to grad school, like you have to have like an emergency budget. You have to like save what's coming in.
What does the concept of enough look like to you?
That's a deep question, because I want to say the first number that popped up into my head was like $500,000. Like, I feel like that would be enough
per year for me. Or in your savings account.
Per year?
Per
for
week?
For sure.
No, I'm just kidding.
Per week? I don't know. Like, I was making $4,000 a month, and I felt like that was perfect. Like, that was perfect. So, per week, I would probably say, like, this is excessive, but like $2,000. And I feel like a lot of that money, if I had it right now, would just go straight to me paying off my debt, which a lot of people would be like, I mean, you're not there. So you don't, why do you have to pay it? Which is something all of my friends were constantly saying. They were like, okay, but you're leaving. So don't worry about your debt right now.
Yeah,
like,
but
you have bigger.
It's still going to be there. And if you go back, then your credit. I think there's
that's
a lot of people
kind of
that
like
think that if you leave the country, then like your debt just disappears, which is not the case. It's interesting because I ask that question to all of my guests and it's not always monetary how they respond.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I just feel like I want a place where I am able to write and make movies. That's all I would really want, to be for it to be enough for me. Mm-hmm. I have hustled before. I'm currently hustling. So that's not something that I would shy away from. And yeah, I usually just move away from, like, I'm trying to move away from thinking money, 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 money. But it's really hard when, you know, that's what you need sometimes to survive.
Yeah. Well, and I also like that you threw out a number that is a lot of money. I mean, even in the U.S., making $500,000 a year is a lot. And
that's good money.
But,
yeah.
Like, it's also okay to say, yeah, but that's how much money I want to make.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, I'm a huge manifester. So I'm just trying to manifest being stable, because stability the past couple of years has been out the window. So I just want to be in a space where I don't really have to worry about the money. And I feel like that's a pretty good number.
Mm-hmm. Amelie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. This has been really fun.
Thank you for having me and for reaching out. Like, I would have never thought that posting that TikTok would get me on some platforms, and I
would get you on this illustrious platform, Other People's Pockets.
Thank you for having me on your platform.
Other People's Pockets is written, hosted, and executive produced by me, Maya Lau. Kristen Torres edited this episode and provided booking and research. Thank you to Pushkin Industries for past production support. Please follow or subscribe to Other People's Pockets on your platform of choice, and see you next time.